And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Moore.
I'm Colin.
And Brewers are on a tear lately, winning 7 out of their last 8, 6 games under 500. And it's just been really good lately. You know, everything's really been clicking. The bullpen's been looking good. Axford is now up to 21 saves. He's got 3 in his last 4 attempts. You know, and it's just... This is the Brewers that we knew last year.
It is. It really is. And this is by far and away... I put up a article yesterday, I believe it was, about the Brewers this month. And once again, you know, August seems to be the month where they like to... where they like to get things done. And this is, once again, it's not as successful as it was in 2011. I get that. But this is, by far and away, their best month of the season so far, from a statistical standpoint and from a pure win and loss standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, you just really have everybody on this team doing well. And, I mean, this is a recipe for success for any ball club. You have Guerrero going out last night, you know, as usual. He's been just so dominant as of lately, going 7 innings, picking up his 14th win. You have Frankie coming in the 8th and his 24th hold. And you have Axford coming in the 9th and getting his 21st save. And neither one of them gave up hits or runs or walked anybody. In fact, Axford struck out 2 people. So, I mean, this is literally the bullpen we have been expecting all year to turn around.
Yeah, absolutely. He had a shaky Axford. Sorry, had a shaky outing against the Pirates, but wasn't during a save situation. You know, we were blanked at the time, and ended up getting shut out 4-0. But 3 saves in his last 4 outings, which gives him a perfect 3-for-3 in his last save opportunities. He's got that confidence back. He has some of that intimidation factor back now, and it's. I mean, how can you not be happy to see that? As far as we know, Axford is going to be the guy going forward, and, you know, you want to see these kind of performances from him.
Exactly, because Remicki, you know, he has his confidence in Axford, and, you know, Axford, I think, finally has gotten to the point where he doesn't think anymore. Because when he thinks, he gets in trouble. He just goes out there and pitches. And that's what we needed from him, and that's what we'll need from him next year. Because I don't see how he can't be the closer going into next year. There's just so many things about him that you have to do. You know, you have to let him, I guess, go through this kind of season to understand what it's like to be a closer. If he's going to go forward, you know, in future years, say 5 to 10 years from now, being a closer still, he's going to have to go through some rough patches, and maybe this was his rough patch in his career. Hopefully this is the only time he'll ever have that for us.
Right.
Now, if he were to go to, like, St. Louis, I hope he would blow it every day. But that's a different story. But, you know... Wait. What?
And you look at these pitchers and the performance they put on. Gallardo threw 102 pitches, 60 of them for strikes. He struck out 9 batters, which, by the way, gives him over 100 strikeouts against just Chicago for his career. And he's well on his way to 200 strikeouts again, which would mean that in Gallardo's entire career in Milwaukee, he will never have less than 200 strikeouts, which I think is an incredible achievement for a pitcher, for any pitcher. Rodriguez threw only 12 pitches in one inning, and he got 9 of them in for strikes, and Axford threw 10 pitches in the 9th. 7 of them for strikes, and there were 2 strikeouts. It's just a dominating performance in a 3-hit game.
Yeah, and people say, well, oh, you beat the Cubs. Well, still, they're a professional team at the end of the day. And, you know, granted, 5 out of Milwaukee's last 7 wins have come from the Cubs, and we have just had their number all year. But, I mean, aside from that, I mean, some of these games weren't, you know, easy victories. You have a 5-2 win back on the 21st, you have a 3-2 win on the 22nd, and you have a 4-1 win last night. I mean, these are games that weren't exactly easily won. And this shows a lot, you know, to the credit of our bullpen that they've been able to hold this down, and the credit to our starters that they've been able to go in and get this job done. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot clicking with Milwaukee right now. And maybe being the Cubs and getting on track a little bit might be that hanging in next year. Like we said, it just it'd be fine if we could just finish at 500 or over a little bit. But, you know, going into September now, we've got a lot of tough matchups. We play Pittsburgh at their home. We play Miami. We play St. Louis. We play Atlanta. We play Pittsburgh again. We play Washington. And we play Cincinnati. So we've got quite a few games there that may put our 500 hope in jeopardy. But the way the Brewers have been playing, I don't know if that's even going to be a concern.
Right. And the thing that's so great about this is you take out the 7-0 win against the Pirates on Sunday, and take out that ninth inning of the game against the Cubs on Monday, where, you know, the entire order batted around in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
And Ryan Braun hit 4 RBIs.
5.
In the ninth.
Oh, yeah.
All 5. Yeah, he hit 4 of them in the ninth inning. So you take that away, and we'll say that didn't happen, but the pitching happened the same, then that's a 6-4 victory against the Cubs. We're not blowing people away, but we're playing sound baseball all the way through in all of our wins. You have a 6-2 win against the Phillies, 7-4 against the Phillies. Our biggest margin of victory against the Reds was three runs. You know, we're playing them close lately, and we're able to hold on to the wins.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's been important is, I mean, you don't necessarily need to blow people out of the water to win games. And that's the way Milwaukee has played mainly this year with a lot of their wins, is through some of that small ball. And, you know, it works just the same. A win's a win at the end of the day. And, I mean, really, you don't need to be blowing people out of the water, because I've noticed teams that do that on a regular basis that have really high-powered offenses really have lackluster starting pitching, because the starting pitching is so reliant on the offense to back them up. If they give up, say, 7 runs. You know, Milwaukee doesn't have that, but Milwaukee still has a fear they put into opposing lineups, especially with Lucroy, Braun, Ramirez, and Hart. You know, that's a lineup that nobody really wants to face all that much, because they know what they can do. It's evident of what they can do. And, you know, sometimes it may be just relying on those four, and then maybe, you know, Niger Morgan will step in if he comes in, or Carlos Gomez, or Norichika Oki will do something. And, you know, there's just a lot of versatility in this lineup, because you could have 4 guys do all your work, or you could have everybody do your work, and at the end of the day, you still might get a win.
Right, and, you know, on that note, I was reading, I hate them, I really do, but I'm a sucker for power rankings. And I was reading Sports Illustrated Power Rankings, and they had the Cardinals way up in the top 5 the last time I looked. And their explanation was that they have such a high margin of victory, even though they lose a lot of their one-run games. They said the one-run losses weren't as indicative of their season as their high margin of victory were. And I kind of take umbrage with that, because I feel like when you look at, you know, October and November, when you look at the playoffs, how many teams run through the playoffs winning each game by 4 or more runs? It's no one. It's almost no one ever.
Yeah,
if you can't win close games late, you're not getting anywhere. I would think that would put them lower, if anything.
Which is so funny that they said that, because you look at Game 6 of the World Series last year when the Cardinals were down and came back, and then came back again. Uh-huh. And it's just, I'm sorry, but that's just really odd to say. It's just, one-run games are as important as 10-run leads. Because that proves a lot about your team. If you can't win these one-run games, how are you expected to do it against better teams? And, I mean, the Cardinals have had their problems, yes, but it's just, you know, that's the thing that Milwaukee's been really able to impress me with, really, and not just this year, but last year as well, is just they've been able to win these close games, you know, 1-2-3-run leads, and hold them, and, you know, come back from them sometimes. And, you know, it's just as crucial, because, especially in the playoffs, you're facing, you know, some of the star pitching, and they're not, you know, you face, like, I don't know, Johnny Cueto in the playoffs, he's not going to let you give up. He's not going to give up 7 runs to you. I mean, he's going to give up maybe 1, if that.
Right.
So I don't get
that. And just to go off on that, Right. Just to go off on that, Milwaukee's record in one-run games this year, 21 and 27. See, look at that differential right there. You have 6 wins, you know, from being 500 in just one-run games, and you're 7 games away from 500 on the season. You turn around just some of those games and look where we are, as opposed to, you know, staring up at the top 3 in the division. We're in the running with them if we can turn that one run record around.
And I'm looking at 3 games right now that we should have won back in July, against the series against Philadelphia, that we lost all 3 games 7-6.
Yep.
We should have won all 3 of those games, and if we had, we'd be 3 games under 500.
And the 2 games against, hey, you can throw the 2 games against the White Sox that we lost in there too.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy how you look back and say, well, you know, as fans we can say, oh, they should have won this, they should have done that, but, you know, as they say, crap happens. But,
right.
But you just look at that and you go, wow, they were that close to being at 500 earlier than they could be right now. I mean, at one point I think Milwaukee was 4 games below, but after before they imploded going into June and July. And, you know, they were that close at one point, and it makes you wonder if they had won a few more games, where they would be right now. Would they be fighting for a wild card spot, realistically? And, you know, with everything clicking now in August, at the end of August, going into September, you know, we may not get into the playoffs, but we can still play spoiler to a lot of teams.
Yeah, we have a division that, we have a schedule that's full of playing division, you know, division contenders for the rest of the year. There's no question that we can spoil some other people's fun, which is, I mean, you got to give us something if you're a Brewers fan. You got to be rooting a little bit for that. Even though I've been talking to a lot of Brewers fans lately, and no one's really upset if the Pirates can make a run and get into the playoffs. I don't know a lot of Brewers fans that would be upset, but it would still be pretty fun to spoil their fun.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to root against the Pirates, even though we play them, because they have been bad since 1992. So,
right.
I mean, you kind of want to root for them as, you want them to at least finish over 500, but the way they've been playing lately has been awful. They have won 2 out of their last, I think, 7, and they got swept by San Diego, we beat them, St. Louis is currently in a 1-1 series with them, and then they play us again. So, you know, I don't want to say Pittsburgh's going to have a collapse and they're going to finish, you know, 1 game, you know, under 500. But the way they're playing, it's kind of looking that way. And you don't want to see that happen, because we don't want to really see, you know, St. Louis and Cincinnati back in the playoffs like they always are sometimes. And,
right.
But, you know, I mean, realistically, the Brewers are 9.5 out, and they're behind Atlanta and St. Louis, who are tied. Pittsburgh is 2 out. The Dodgers are 2.5 out, and Arizona is 7.5 out. So there's, you know, they weren't as far as back as they were. You know, Philadelphia is right behind them, and then the Mets are there. But hey, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying anything. Maybe it's just blind hope at this point, but I mean, you make a run this late, and you have teams like Pittsburgh that's faltering, and maybe St. Louis. You have a definite shot, though.
Yeah. No, I'd say that. And I'd say if you're a Pittsburgh Pirates fan or just interested in seeing the Pirates do well, don't be too upset if the Pirates don't end up making it into the playoffs. Because you look at the last couple years where you had Pittsburgh at the top of the division near the All-Star break, and then they just took a swan dive in the second half of the season. And now they've been competitive and close all the way through, and if they don't make it in, you still have a definite improvement in your team. And I think next year, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who wouldn't enter the Pirates into the discussion for winning this division in 2013.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because they have a lot that, you know, would surprise you that's really good. I mean, A.J. Burnett came out of nowhere and did pretty good. They did
right.
release Eric Bedard, who they thought was going to do well, but just has not done well, and that's why they got rid of him. They have James McDonald. You know, they got Randy Rodriguez. They recently added Hisanori Takahashi for their bullpen, so that's, you know, some padding there. And offensively, ever since they traded Casey McGee. I always called it McGahee for some reason. That's what it looks like. It looks like it's McGahee, but it's McGee. But
it does. He's one of those names that broadcasters all have their own pronunciation for. Just like when you're watching the Brewers, if you're not watching it on like FS Wisconsin, you hear Gallardo.
Yeah.
Which bugs me so much because it just because it does. So
I mean, he's not a tub of lard. I mean, Gallardo.
Right.
It's not that hard to pronounce, but anyway, ever since McGee left, they had Josh Harrison sometimes playing third, and he's been doing pretty well there. Had a collision last night with Yadier Molina. And, you know, the rest of the Pirates, obviously Andrew McCutchen, Garrett Jones, Neil Walker, Gabby Sanchez. There's a lot that the Pirates can look forward towards next year, but it's also still, are they really ready to try and turn the page? Because there's still a lot of problems there. And the fact that they've been losing a lot of games this late doesn't really sit well, you know, I know, with management, because management can't be happy about that, the fact that the Pirates
right.
are blowing so many games now. But, you know, it happens. Maybe they'll regain their composure somehow and maybe get into the playoffs this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if they don't. But it'd be nice if they did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, bridging the gap here, I think the Pirates have a very small window. With the Brewers having such an unexpectedly poor season this year, coming off defending their division title, the Pirates have a very small window. There's no telling that the Brewers will repeat this performance that they had this season in 2013. And the Cardinals are getting a little bit older. It's going to be harder for them to, you know, it's going to be harder for them to keep pace. When you have you know, so many aging players, and Lance Berkman is probably going to retire. Matt Holliday continues to struggle with injuries, and they're spending, you know, a lot of money on their pitching staff now. It's the time for Pittsburgh to strike this year or next year, and otherwise they might be left behind. The Reds aren't going anywhere anytime soon. If we can project some of these people that the Brewers have in their farm system forward, I think you're looking at a nice block of years that the Brewers will be consistently relevant, if not extremely competitive. You know, there's no better time for Pittsburgh to get on its playoff horse than right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You have maybe Cincinnati, who might be the only standstill threat there, because with Wainwright coming off of injury and pitching this year, he's doing pretty well. You know, he's getting older. Carpenter is going to be coming off of surgery and an injection. He'll be about, I think, 37. I mean, you have Kyle Lowe, who has not, for his career, done really well, but for the past years in St. Louis has done well. And then you have Jaime Garcia, who came back from injury. And that's the thing that has really bogged down the Cardinals' pitching staff, is all these injuries they've been facing. And offensively, like you said, you know, Holliday's always been struggling from coming off the DL and going back on it. Berkman's might retire. Really, the only consistent person you have in that lineup right now, maybe the only two people, are David Freese and Yadier Molina. You know, sure, John Jay gets his hits
right.
every now and then, but really, I mean, for the Pirates, though, you have to strike now. You have to strike while St. Louis might be in a rebuilding phase, while the Brewers are still trying to figure out where they are, and while the Reds, they still might hold that lead, but you never know if you threaten them too much, because outside of maybe Johnny Cueto and Homer Bailey, their pitching's a little suspect. Offensively, they've been doing really well without Joey Votto, but when he comes back, it'll just add a lot to them. But, you know, for the Brewers and Pirates, it's real for them. They can honestly go into next year and be threats in the NL Central. I fully believe that.
Who do you think poses the bigger threat in 2013? Do you think it's the Brewers or do you think it's Pittsburgh?
No, it's the Brewers. And I'm not just saying that out of bias. I'm saying that out of talent. Because you look at what the Brewers will have in their pitching staff, provided we can hold on to Markham, who we're going to talk about a little bit later. Provided we can hold on to Markham, we have a pretty good rotation. We'll have Gallardo, Markham, Fires, Estrada, maybe Narvison or Thornburg. Maybe even throw Mark Rogers in the discussion. Who knows? And then offensively, nothing changes at all. You still keep the same guys unless you want to trade maybe for Corey Hart that we talked about before, maybe get rid of Matt Gamble. I mean, really nothing changes. You have Luke Coy still. You have Aoki. You have Braun. You have Ramirez. There's a lot that's I like about Milwaukee. I think there's a lot of positives about them. If the bullpen can finally figure out what the problem is and go forward with a solid bullpen that maybe consists of Cameron Lowe, John Axford, and who knows who else. I don't know who from this season you want to keep. I definitely don't want to keep Manny Parra. I know that much. But
right.
I like the Brewers more than I do the Pirates going into next year.
Yeah, and you look at this bullpen, or just the pitching staff in general. I'm looking at their stats over the last 30. We have two pitchers with a losing record over their last 30 games. Jim Henderson, who's 0-2 in 13 games, but is also 3-for-4 in save opportunities. And then you have Markham, who is 0-1, who, I mean, really, zero unearned runs, you know, in his 5-inning loss. Which is so difficult. It's got to be difficult to have that. They have a 0.00 ERA and a loss.
Yeah. that's a punch in the gut.
It is. But you look at the top five pitchers for the Brewers over the last month, all have an ERA. We'll even add Estrada in there, who's at 3. So we'll make a 3.0 ERA a cutoff. And you have six pitchers there who are under that. And that includes Frankie Rodriguez, and Cameron Lowe, and a Jose Barris.
Really? That's pretty crazy.
Which, yeah, Jose Barris right now is his last nine games, 1.8 ERA, 10 innings, 7 hits, only 2 earned runs, one of them coming from a home run, 5 walks, and 16 strikeouts, with a .194 batting average. That's
That's
Jose Barris. Batters are hitting 194 against him.
Jose Barris. I mean, basically the Spanish version of Manny Parra.
Right. And if this can't show you, you know, what's happening in this bullpen in the last month, you know, you have Livan Hernandez, who's 2-0. John Axford's 1-1 with, he's 5-for-6 in save opportunities on the month. You know, the only real outstanding, like, bad spot in here, Mike Fiers has had a shaky month, you know, coming off a really, really impressive year, which was bound to happen at some point. He's still fairly wet behind the ears. And then you have, you know, the newly departed Randy Wolf, who was 0-3 with a 6.94 ERA.
Yeah, you know, the bullpen, this is a bullpen we haven't seen the entire year, and now we're finally seeing them. And I don't know what took them so long to get their butts into gear, but I guess it's better late than never, because now we know that there are some people that are competent that we have, so maybe we can keep a few of them going into next year.
You know, right.
I did want to talk about Sean Markham, though, now that he's back from injury. And the one thing I was reading about him was, according to Ken Rosenthal, Markham has been placed on trade waivers as of yesterday.
Yes.
I haven't heard any teams stabbing at his name lately. But, I mean, if he goes, I really don't think he will, to be quite honest. You know, pitcher's coming off of injury, you know, who's only made one start. So I don't know how many teams are going to be after him. Texas. But, oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry.
If you want... It's okay. If you wanted to... If you wanted to move Sean Markham, I think the time to do it was the official free agency, the official trade deadline, and not put him onto waivers. His waiver period, the waiver period expires noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. He's got one start back from injury. I don't see a lot of teams really gunning for him. Unfortunately, I think it's an indication that Markham probably won't be back. I would love to have seen the Brewers really pull out all the stops and try to get a deal worth what he's done for us in the last 2 years. But I think Markham's gone, but I don't think anyone picks him up on waivers. I think he sticks through till the end of the season.
And do you think, if we don't get Markham, do you honestly think, and I mean, I haven't given up hope on this, that there's a chance that the Brewers make a stab for Zach Greinke in the offseason?
You know what? Call me crazy if you want, but the Brewers put in an offer on Zach Greinke. They absolutely do.
I mean, if you do, and he comes back, that's hilarious, and the Angels will hate us for the rest of eternity.
Right, because we did a cartoonish heist of the Los Angeles Angels, Vanaheim, if we get Zach Greinke back. And when you think about it, what do the Brewers have to lose to offer them, with the money we're going to save by letting Markham walk? We save a little bit of money there. We had to buy out, I think it ended up being like $5 million on Wolf's contract, plus the money that we gave him for the rest of his service in 2012. So we save a substantial amount of money off his buyout there. There's another $4 or $5 million there. And all of a sudden, that offer we were going to get of Greinke in the season of $100 million becomes closer to $112 million. And I'm dumbing down the numbers a little bit, obviously. The finances don't quite work as black and white as I'm putting it out. But you do have an ability to give him substantially more to the offer we extended to him. And you have nothing to lose. You know, you put that out there and say, Greinke, this is what we want to get you back. And if he decides to come back, we have pulled one of the greatest tricks in the history of baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, even if, we'll probably let Markham walk in. It was great to have him. He's a good pitcher, but we can survive without him. And even if we do make that stab at Greinke and he doesn't come back, I'm still fine with our rotation because I think, realistically, just in my opinion, what it would be is Gallardo, Fires, Estrada, Narvison, then Rogers. That's how I would put it. I wouldn't set that in stone necessarily, but I mean, if you get Greinke back, that's a huge boost then to what you have, because if you've noticed, he has not really done well, maybe other than one or two outings with the Angels, ever since he went there. He did well with us, but he has not done well in L.A. Now, I don't know if that's maybe the pressure of them trying to catch up to Texas in the West and trying not to lose out to the A's. I don't know if it's that there that he was just thrown into, because he's new to that rivalry. So there's a lot there that Greinke has to deal with, and, it's AL batting, and he's back in the AL. He's on a whole new team, has to build chemistry with these pitchers. So maybe he won't stay there. I mean, going to a team like that has to be pretty uncomfortable. In my opinion, it would be.
Yeah, I think when you look at what's going to happen in the winter meetings, it was surrounding Greinke and we'll say Markham, because I think we're both in agreement that Markham's going to go now. A move like this, there's not a whole lot of subtlety involved in it. So you look at Markham will get picked up. Markham is a pitcher that any team can add to their rotation and feel very comfortable with. There's no question that he's been, outside of his playoff performance in 2011, there's no question that he's been one of the most dependable guys we've had. And he's going to get picked up somewhere. It's not going to be a stellar deal. No one's going to, shout or write a dozen headlines about it. But he's going to catch on, and he'll do very well. Greinke, on the other hand, is going to get... He's going to find the market dwindling a little bit because of what happened in LA. He went to, you know, he got traded, and he blew off an offer from the Brewers that could have netted him a fair amount of money. So it's safe to say that he was chasing a bigger paycheck, and he didn't back up with his play necessarily. Now there's plenty of baseball left for him, but he's going to have to perform really, really well going forward in order to draw the kind of interest that, say, that, say, even Prince Fielder drew last year during the winter meetings.
Yeah, and I don't think heading into this season, Greinke's going to be the top free agent. He'll be a top starting free agent, you know, pitching-wise, but I don't think he's going to be overall one of the bigger names. I think probably the bigger name on the market's probably going to be Josh Hamilton. But, but I mean, the Angels, they've been trying to rebound with a lot of losses they've been suffering lately. And, you know, Greinke has been the culprit of some of those losses. And if he doesn't, like you said, improve his play at all, those potential suitors that open up to him won't be that interested in him. I know the Brewers will still have an interest in him regardless because of how well he did up here and how well he liked it up here. Because really, I really think it's a shade of two different Greinkes. A Greinke that did well in Milwaukee and a Greinke that doesn't do well in L.A. I think if he comes back to Milwaukee, he'll do just fine. And really, you throw Greinke into that mix next year, that really solidifies my position for the Brewers to do well next year. Possibly even take over the division. Because really, I think, honestly, and yet again, this really is not biased, and I know it comes off as biased because this is a Brewers show, but I don't know if there's another rotation in the NL Central that could possibly have a better one than us right now, going into next year, because Fires has had, he's been bad lately. Estrada has been turning around, Rogers has been doing good. I'm sure Fires just, he has to look human for a little bit, so he'll be fine. Gallardo, there's no stopping him. I mean, I just, if you feel Greinke back in there, I mean, really, name me a better pitching staff in the NL Central than them. There really isn't one.
Right now, you have the Reds giving them a definite run for their money, but you don't have, I don't think any team, I'll put it this way, I don't think any team in the NL Central has a higher ceiling than Milwaukee's starting rotation. I won't say that Milwaukee's rotation is the best rotation in the division going into next year, but I will say there's more potential in Milwaukee's rotation than in any other team in the National League Central.
Yeah, because you look at a lot of teams, like we said earlier, with the injuries that, you know, the Cardinals have suffered and the inconsistencies that the Pirates have been going through. And the Reds have really only been relying on Cueto and Leake and Bailey, and eventually, and sometimes the occasional Bronson or Arroyo. But, you know, Houston's going to be gone next year. The Cubs are still lost out in space somewhere. And
right.
This really is an opportunity for Milwaukee to make their mark again. And who knows? I mean, it can be next year because if Pittsburgh doesn't get off to the start they had this year, or just absolutely blows it from the rest of this year on and just can't get a kickstart, then they're kind of down in the division. St. Louis, I think it's just a matter of time till they break. And that just really pins Milwaukee up against Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah, I think going forward, most of the division talk is going to be surrounding Milwaukee and Cincinnati. And rightfully so. I think those two teams have the most potential around, you know, on every side of the ball. I like Milwaukee's depth a little bit more, you know, looking at just who could be coming off the bench potentially, who can be coming up from the minor leagues, and especially pitching depth. I think Milwaukee has a little bit of a higher ceiling there. But, man, Cincinnati is just so good. I don't know how else to say it. Cincinnati is good. They are a good baseball team.
You know, they have a lot of weapons offensively, and they've been able to capitalize really on that. And for a team to be really just always down by their pitching, they have never really slacked offensively. And that's, I think, Cincinnati's big strong suit is they just don't rely on Joey Votto's bat. Because, I mean, look at it. Look at the Reds right now. They have Brandon Phillips. They have Jay Bruce. I mean, even Ryan Ludwig is doing well.
Yeah.
Scott Rowland's had a few good games. You have the rookies, Zach Kozar and Brandon Frazier, doing well. There's just a lot that's really good with the Reds offensively. And
right.
You know, people won't recognize it, but, I mean, they're a lineup I really want to face. They do rank, you know, midway MLB-wise, but they do rank 8th overall in slugging percentage. So, you know, they're not a team I think is going to go out and win the World Series, but they're a team that's going to give you a run for your money.
Absolutely. I don't think it's out of the question that they can make a run at a championship. But I think the American League right now probably has a little bit more in the tank than any NL team that would challenge them. So I think we're a ways off from Cincinnati taking that. But
yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell really with them because with the inconsistencies in their bullpen and. I mean, besides Chapman, it's been really kind of suspect there because you have Sean Marshall who would come in sometimes, maybe Sam McClure. But, you know, with Cincinnati, they're kind of going through the same thing Milwaukee's going through, only it's not as apparent and not as bad because they've had it in previous years. I mean, the NL Central is a revolving door of just teams. One year it's St. Louis, one year it's Milwaukee, one year it's Cincinnati, one year it's probably going to be the Cubs. I mean, it's just... The NL Central is not one of the more stronger divisions in baseball, and it's very apparent as to why it always changes. And people will say, well, isn't that just because it's competitive? Well, yes and no. It is a competitive division, as are all divisions in baseball, but you never have a clear-cut winner in that division.
Yeah. For a while, it was, you know, it kind of goes in stages. I mean, in the last part of, you know, the 90s, it was Houston's division, strangely enough. There were a couple of years there where Houston kind of took everything. And then it became more, you know, there were a couple of years in there where it was the Cubs. And then there were a couple of years there where it was St. Louis. And that's largely the portion where we're at, you know, in the era of Pujols, although it's over now, obviously. It was the Cardinals' division to lose. And then suddenly the Brewers showed up, and then the Reds showed up 1 year. And then, you know, it's... And that... I find that a lot more fun, personally. Because now the division is competitive almost throughout, and will be more so. Sorry, Houston fans, but it will be more so when Houston leaves. And they turn into the punching bag for, you know, the AL Central. But,
AL West, I believe.
AL West, sorry, yeah. I want the Rangers to be in the AL Central. It seems to make more geographic sense, but whatever.
I don't know why you have two teams from Texas in one division.
natural rivalry, of course. But it's a competitive division that is going to get more competitive between, you know, that top four. And really, there's no reason why with what the Cubs are doing, and you see Anthony Rizzo and David DeJesus and Starlin Castro and that team that they're building right now, Jeff Samardzija, who we're pitching against tonight. I mean, there are a lot of tough players on the Cubs, and there's no saying that all five of these teams can't be competitive going forward. So I think if you're a baseball fan, just a pure baseball fan and National League baseball fan before that, you should be really excited about where the NL Central is going.
You know, with the Cubs, though, I think what's more devastating to them isn't their offense, but really their pitching. It's just really bad. I mean, Jeff Samardzija leads the team in ERA at 4.09. There's just a lot that's not
right.
I mean, Carlos Momo has 16 saves on this season. Their pitching leader in wins isn't even with them anymore. Paul Mahomes. He's not
right.
With the Braves. So I think the Cubs have to figure that out in a few years. But, you know, they do have a lot of young talent that can carry them maybe until then. You have Darwin Barney, Castro, Brian LaHare, Anthony Rizzo, DeJesus. And, I mean, Strelino's getting up there in age, but he can still, you know, hit the ball to the ballpark. So there's a lot that's there with them. But I think they just have way too many pitching inconsistencies to really get anywhere. Hence why they're, you know, 49 and 79 in the year. And I'm not saying it's all because of the pitching. Their run differential is pretty in the toilet at this point. But there is just... I would like to see the Cubs be competitive because it would just add to this division, really. But I think if you have a four-team race until then, it's going to be just still competitive. With getting rid of Houston and putting them in the West, I don't know how well it's going to fare with them because you have now Seattle, who's only four games under 500, and Seattle hasn't been in this place in a very long time. They're improving. Right. Oakland's improving. So, I mean, I don't know how Houston's going to do there at all.
I don't think Houston will do well. Starting out, they seem to be struggling to get the right pieces, and that takes some time. But they have a whole new ownership group. They're getting a new manager. You know, and I think that's a place. Everyone in Kansas City seems as comfortable as you can be with Ned Yost, I guess. see that, like, Houston, I think, would be the perfect place for a manager like him. Someone who's fiery, who really gets after young guys to shape up and start playing, you know, mistake-free baseball. I feel like Ned Yost would be, like, one of the perfect candidates for Houston. It would be interesting to see, you know, where Houston goes in the future. You will definitely want to keep an eye on them. But you know, as far as getting back to the Cubs here, you have I don't think you can really doubt Theo Epstein's resume in terms of picking the right people to make a team successful. And I think, you know, it's going to take some time, and everyone's giving him and Dale Swaim a nice long leash. And I think the two of them together will put together a winning product within the next 3 years.
I mean, you have to think so, considering how Epstein was in Boston and how Boston, you know, won two World Series under him. So, right. I mean, he knew what he was doing there. Boston's now falling apart without him there, if anybody's been noticing that. You know, they did make a 7-year deal with Castro with $60 million, so they're investing in a lot of their younger talent. And maybe this is a sign of things to change for the Cubs. You know, maybe they'll start seeing, well, we can bring up this guy, or we can trade for this guy, or sign this guy in the offseason. Because now they have a little bit more of a leeway with Epstein there, who has a little bit more money than the previous owner did.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, he can't go buy everybody because, you know, there is that salary cap. Well, not really a salary cap, but a luxury tax.
Right.
And, you know, that's going to be maybe a thorn in his side a little bit, considering how used to it he was in Boston. But the Cubs aren't a team I think you can just change overnight. It's going to take a few years.
Yeah, it's a shift in culture, it's a shift in personnel, and it's going to take some time. But I think if you're a Cubs fan, you have a lot to be hopeful for, and I think if you're a Brewers fan, you have a fair amount to be worried about when it comes to Chicago. You know, we like to mix it up with Cubs fans as Brewers fans. I don't personally. I find the fan arguments that go on in Brewers Cubs series just ridiculous because you're not doing anything. You're not affecting the game at all by making fun of someone from being from Chicago and you know, being born in Chicago and having family ties there for, you know, my entire life. I find it a little difficult to have the rivalry at the same intense level that a lot of these people do, and also the perspective, my own personal perspective on baseball fandom, but. You know, we do like to mix it up with them, and I think it's, I think you have to show them a little bit more respect going forward. They are not quite the punching bag going forward that they were for years previous.
And if they feel the need to run their mouths, do we need to bring up the football rivalry of this? Because, oh man, let's bring that up and see how many times we've crushed the Bears.
It's hard to hear over those Super Bowl rings.
there's this picture I saw, and it has Jay Cutler with like this earpiece in, and he's talking to somebody. It was during one of the games or whatever, and somebody captioned it and says, "Please, Mr. Rogers, have mercy on my team." All right. Last segment I want to get into players and hitters of the week. Actually, end of the month as well, since this is our last podcast of August. For me, pitcher of the week has to be John Axford. He did have that little mishap with the Pirates, but since then, he's gone on to get 3 saves. He's just looked really impressive lately, and this is the Axford we've known. Just goes in there, doesn't think, throws the ball, and gets people out. And other than that Pittsburgh outing, he's only given up 1 hit in his 3 save opportunities, which he's gotten all saves in, and he struck out 5.
He's been very impressive. I'm going to be honest, for my pitcher of the week and pitcher of the month, I got to go Gallardo. Nobody has proven themselves to be as consistently effective and has been able to shake off any amount of pressure riding on them the way that Gallardo has. Last 7 games, 2-0 with a 1.93 ERA. And on the month, he's 6-0 with a 1.9 ERA and 44 strikeouts in 42 innings with only 9 earned runs.
Yeah, Gallardo is definitely my pick for pitcher of the month because he is just, in August, he has been very dominant. He has not lost a game in August. He is, 6-0, 5-0 in August? He had an ERA of 3.54, struck out 155 batters in 150 innings pitched, and he only walked 58, so his strikeout-to-walk ratio was through the roof in August.
Yeah.
Player of the week, offensively, Ryan Braun. He had that monster game against the Cubs, going 4-for-6, scored 3 runs, got 5 RBIs. He just seemed to be on base all the time, but walked 3 times in one of the games against Pittsburgh. And, he's just been a monster lately, as he has been all season.
Yeah, there's no way Braun's not in contention for player of the week every week. However, I'm going to give a little love to Jeff the Yankee. Jeff the Yankee in his last 7 games got called up again, and nobody really thought anything about him. We knew there was a little bit of potential there, but we weren't sure if we were really going to see any of it at his age. And he comes out and gets his first professional hit, and then gets a multi-hit game against Pittsburgh in the finale. Then he gets his first RBI against the Cubs, and then he gets his first home run against the Cubs. For the week, if we can score at home, he's averaging .556, 4 RBIs, 1 home run, a double, 5 hits, 1 run, and 2 strikeouts in 9 at-bats.
It's very impressive for such a young player like Jeff Bianchi, and going forward, he may be our shortstop answer going forward, and I would like to see a little bit more out of him in the next year.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice spring training battle if Jeff Bianchi can keep up this kind of production. And then you have, how's this for a really nice problem to have? Either Gene Segura or Jeff Bianchi at shortstop, both of them can do the things that they've been doing so far this season.
Yeah, that is a very nice problem to have. My player of the month offensively for the Brewers, Jonathan Lucroy. He has returned from injury and is as strong as ever. He batted .305 so far in the month of August. 18 hits, 9 runs scored, 3 doubles, 3 home runs, 11 RBIs. He's really been patient at the plate lately. Lucroy has just been impressive. And he still has, that every fifth day off. But, which I still think is kind of odd, since when Randy Wolf isn't there anymore. But
I think that's more to just keep him relaxed and to keep giving Maldonado more time. You have to keep Maldonado in a rhythm because we need him at the plate, and we want him to keep developing.
Yeah, it's not like having Maldonado is a bad choice. He's doing very good as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but Lucroy, though, he has to win it for the month of August for me. He has just done so well, especially coming back from a crucial hand injury, which, I mean, that can really affect the catcher.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my player of the month, I'm going to take the easy road on my player of the month, and I'm going to go Aramis Ramirez. 8 doubles, 30 hits, 19 runs scored, 8 home runs, 20 RBIs. I mean, that's just good work. That's just playing good baseball. And how about how he's been defensively? Right now, he's one of the top fielding third basemen in the league at his age and with what has always been, I would consider, limited range.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if there may be a gold glove in his future, but, I mean, it's pretty impressive what he's been able to do at third base. And replacing somebody who now he's like 3 upgrades from whatever Casey McGee ever was. And, you know, I like having Ramos Ramirez. He complements Ryan Braun's bat in the lineup very well. Defensively, as of late, he's been proving he's really good. And he has a WAR of 3.7. I mean, right. That's incredible.
Yeah, and when we originally picked up Ramirez, I mean, it was obvious that it was just for the bat. I think you know, any talk about him defensively was very much like, oh well, if he does great, that'll be great. But even his offense is a vast improvement over Casey McGee. And then suddenly he is, you know, doing really well on defense, and he's become the steal in free agency, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, he's putting up identical numbers to last year with the Cubs, and he'll probably even maybe surpass those. And he's been one of the best players we've added, really, in the past year or two. And you know, we have him for 2 more years after this. So who knows how he'll hold up in the next 2 years. But, I mean, if he's still playing at this rate, he's going to be fine.
So I think so. And I think it's a well-deserved honor for him to be our player of the month.
Yeah, I wanted to throw Luke in there just because of coming back from injury, but I definitely have no problems with making it really to be Aramis Ramirez, because that's just really impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, to basically take the presence of one of the better hitters in the game, Prince Fielder, and put you in that spot, I mean, and you do well, that has to feel, like, amazing.
Right. But I do have to say, if you want something more for Luke Roy, and I have to throw this out before we get there. Lucroy's had 211 at-bats this season. 29 strikeouts.
Yeah, his patience at the plate is incredible.
He's not drawing a lot more walks either, which is, he only has 16 walks on the year. And he's hitting .332.
It's not the fact that he's drawing walks, it's just he's waiting for his pitch, and he's not swinging at pitches way outside, or he's not, you know, swinging and getting down 0-2 in the count after 3 pitches. I mean, he's really improved his number of pitches he's seeing at the plate. He's a smarter batter now. And that is a lot of positives for not only himself, but going forward for the team.
He's an almost impossible out right now. .332 average, 29 strikeouts, .386 on base, .550 slugging, and a .936 OPS. You have a hard time getting Lucroy out at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've definitely picked a few of the better players for this month and for the past week, because they've been a huge reason as to why the Brewers have been doing so well lately. And, you know, pitching-wise, maybe we can give it all to the bullpen lately, because the way they've been just throwing everything down and just, they've been looking like a bullpen that wants to win a championship. We probably won't win it this year, but I mean, they look like a really good bullpen as of lately.
Absolutely. In terms of, definitely in the last, like, 2 weeks, I'll say, the bullpen has been fantastic. I can't give them the whole month, but
Give them what you can.
Exactly. They'll take what they can get at this point, I'm sure.
All right, guys. Stay tuned for next week when we enter September. And as always, thank you for listening.
See you later, guys.